Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, February 5th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
You know, Tuesdays are so weird. They're just a weird day of the week.
Why?
Well, because everyone hates Mondays, and Tuesday is hump day, so you're midway between Monday and Friday. Thursday is Friday Junior. Friday, everyone loves Friday, but Tuesday is just this weird hole in the middle.
All right, well, welcome to the podcast live from the hole. So,
we call it a work day.
Spoiler alert, my other guest today is John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi. Good morning.
That was quite the entrance. All right. Here we are from the hole in the week, and we are going to talk a little bit about a hole in Apple's user experience, because we are going to discuss annoyances from Apple. And John, this was something that you had brought up, so I'm going to let you take us through it. Stuff that Apple does that still annoys us.
It was from Dan Morin.
Hi, Dan.
A link article. Dan's great. I pay attention to his thoughts. He writes for Macworld.
Oh, Dan is great, but I pay no attention to his thoughts. No, I'm just kidding.
February 1st, he wrote an article called Three Apple Decisions That Don't Please the User, But the Company Just Won't Change. Mm-hmm. And that sort of rung a bell with me, because it's a familiar feeling that there is a scuttlebutt amongst the community that this is what we need, this is what we want, and then we're frustrated that Apple won't change. Dan's three big things were Apple's focusing on big phones. Mm-hmm. Well, there is a segment, at least, of people. I like big phones. I have a 10R.
And he cannot lie.
10S, I have a 10S Max, and I love it. But there's a vocal community of people who like the smaller phones, the SE.
Yeah, those would be people with hands.
Yeah. And then the price, there doesn't seem to be any, except for overseas, where there's exchange issues and economic issues. The $1,000 phone in the United States seems to be about, permanent. Mm-hmm. And then he bitched about the iCloud storage. Mm-hmm. Since 2011... 8 years, you only get 5 gigabytes free. Mm-hmm. And that has not changed. And it feels like we're being strong-armed into buying more storage.
Well,
and putting everything in the cloud and having to decide what to put in the cloud.
Part of the note that I thought was interesting on this was the perspective on that, which is that iCloud storage free for customers happened in 2011, like he said. But he also pointed out the latest, greatest phone in 2011 was the 4S. And if you bought the 4S at maximum storage, it was 64 gigabytes.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Now, I will point out that you also paid a ridiculous amount of money if you wanted to upgrade storage at that time. But it is a little bit better, because you can get 50 gig now for $1 a month, which is not terrible. So, but 50 gigs still doesn't bring you in at, doesn't even bring you to 64 gigabytes.
Yeah, Apple's sending us mixed messages. They want us to use the cloud for backup, encouraging us.
Because why would you plug it into iTunes? Blitchipper.
Yeah.
Right. Well, every other company kind of goes with the flow and increases the free storage a little bit. Mm-hmm. Still gets your money for extra storage, but the amount that's free is reasonable. Mm-hmm. 5 gigabytes is not reasonable, and for a company that's doing so well and generating so much service revenue, it seems like they're strong arming the customers. So that was his third bitch.
Yeah, and it's frustrating. Like, this is one that has irked me for a while. The one that's on my list is a very, very tiny thing. It's so small, but it happens to me all the time. And that is, if you are renaming a file and you are using a file save dialog versus clicking on a file in the Finder, one of them will leave the file extension intact. So, like, the automatic selection of the highlight. Yeah. Like, one of them highlights just the file name and leaves the extension alone so that you can change the file name to whatever you want, but your PDF is still a PDF. And the other one, when you click on it, it's the entire thing. So if you just start typing and don't double check, then you end up blowing away the file extension. And now your computer's like, what am I supposed to do with this? It has no extension. I'm not your psychic friend. So I find that very, very aggravating. And I don't want to, but I run into it all the time. And that's why I find it endlessly frustrating. So that's my big annoyance. Andrew, how about you? Do you have an annoyance?
I don't see it.
I have a couple. So you guys were talking about cloud storage. Mm-hmm. I think it's annoying how Apple tries so hard to upsell us on physical storage. Like, 1 year, there's an iPhone that was 64 gigs, 128, 256. Mm-hmm. And then the next year, the new model was something dumb like 32 gigs, and then it jumps to 128 and then 256. Like, there's always some option in the middle that they remove.
Yeah, it's very odd what the capacity availability is, particularly on mobile devices. iPads tend to be the same way. Like, you know, 64 gig is about the right size for an iPad for some people, and, you know, good luck finding that, you know. So I agree with you, and part of the reason that's aggravating is because you have to go in and get all the storage that you can, because that's absolutely not one that you can upgrade later. It's not like in certain models of laptop or iMac where you can swap out a hard drive or swap out some flash storage and get a little bit more space. Like, your phone has the space that it has forever and ever, amen. And so you have to go in knowing, and, you know, if 64 is the sweet spot for you, like, there may not be a phone for you right now. So then what do you do? Like, do you force yourself to scale back, or do you pay more money? And it's kind of a lot, you know, to get the next size up.
And that decision is made in a panic mode at midnight. Or 2 a.m. in Central Time Zone.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I can't get 32. I can't get 64. Oh, the only one I can get. Click now. Hurry up before they're sold out. 256. Oh, buy it now. Boom.
Yep.
$200 down the tubes.
Mm-hmm. And it's those are ones that I totally see being aggravated by. Now, John, what's one that annoys you that's not on the list?
Whenever Apple introduces a new version of iOS, like 10, 11, 12, there's always some glitzy new features that Apple touts that are the greatest thing in the universe, and you should embrace them. And after you do the update, they're turned on by default.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not careful, you can go merrily along for a while, not realizing that some feature which has some security implications or privacy implications has been turned on. And then you find out later that it shouldn't have been on, and that you should have gone through your settings with a fine-tooth comb and figured out all these things that Apple has turned on by default, and make an informed decision about which ones you should leave on and which ones you should turn off right away. And that's a task that I do every time there's a new version of the operating system, and it frustrates me. Apple should tout the new features, but they should be off by default until you decide that their security implications are none and the value is high and you want that feature.
You know, I like the idea of almost, you know, because everything is very flat and kind of black and white in that settings app. I like the idea of maybe those being a slightly different color. Like, if it's something new in iOS 12... You know,
that's brilliant. Yeah.
Then
shaded in a light red,
or there's this like a new. or you know, it's sort of highlighted like alternating rows in a spreadsheet or something. Like, you get, you know, the stuff that is a new panel in 12 or has new stuff underneath it in 12 would be, you know, slightly highlighted, like a light gray behind it or something, just so you can see like these are the new ones I should go poke around in and see what's up. And
that's brilliant.
And it wouldn't be hard, and it wouldn't screw with anything, but you could tell, like, oh, this is a new one in 12. This is a thing I need to sit with and figure out. You know, and I feel like, at least for me, that would make that stuff more obvious, as opposed to waiting for John to come to the morning meeting one day and go, did you know that this feature is totally messing with you? I would much prefer it that way.
I recommend you sit in front of the TV with your iPhone in hand, and at night, and while you're time sharing, go through the settings, go through every setting on your phone and ask yourself, why is this on? Do I need it? is it a problem? Mm-hmm. And make an informed decision about whether you want it on. Notifications, location services for various apps, so on, so on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I do. Like, once in a while, I'll just poke around in settings and see if I need to change anything or not.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't have to be that way, but it is a thing that I think does need sort of walked through once in a while, especially because we do continue to get new features, not just between like iOS 11 and iOS 12, for example, but, you know, 12 and 12.1 or 12.1 and 12.2, like sometimes new stuff or adjustments to some of those options come as part of that. So it's entirely possible that something is on your phone right now or on your iPad that you didn't realize was enabled, let alone, you know, maybe you didn't even know that was a thing, and it turns out that it's actually on, and maybe you don't want that. So it would be nice if there were some sort of clear indication of what's new since the last iOS update, at least, right? And then, you know, when everybody goes to 12.0, you can see some of these things are a different color in some way or indicated somehow, like these are the newest ones. And then once those have once you've walked through those, then you can move on to the next thing. That would be great.
Yeah, and I think the part of the problem is that new features are designed to be helpful and useful, but they haven't gone through the acid test of the internet yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so every new feature has within it the capability or the opportunity of an exploit mm-hmm. by creative and inventive people. And until the community has determined that this new feature has been well written and security audited and is mm-hmm. free from opportunities, then you should leave it off.
Well, and that's
you desperately need it.
Right. And that's one thing that I do like about there being a public beta now is that something that is reasonably stable does get released so that people can get their hands on it and see how they feel about it, what it looks like, how it actually operates, how it interacts with whatever combination of people of, you know, apps that people have installed. So that is one thing that makes me really glad about the public beta is that there's a lot more opportunity out there. And, you know, they are it's public. They're very upfront about it. But they do and they do point out, like, you know, it is still a beta. So, you know, you are sort of running it at your own risk, but you do get an opportunity for that kind of test bed because there's only, you know, there's only so many ways and so many permutations that however many people Apple has testing can test. And it's exponentially more if you release something like that into the world where people have so many millions of devices that have iOS installed on them that they could put this on and walk through the paces and see what they think. So I really like that
idea. I also wish your settings would sync between your devices. I mean, I have settings just the way I want them on my phone. And then when I bought my iPad, I had to like go through settings and redo everything and fine tune it the way I like. It's annoying.
I could not agree with you less. That would be my own personal hell if my settings had to be the same on both my devices because I use them so differently. So for me, that would be a disaster. I would be on here every day. One of our topics would be, darn you, Apple. I shake my fist at thee from the heart of the frozen Portland tundra right now. That would be like an absolute nightmare. I wouldn't want that at all. Now, being able to transfer some stuff might be okay, but yeah.
You want another complaint, Kelly?
Sure.
Routers, base stations. Apple got out of the business completely at the time when they should be getting into it more and more.
Really?
For security, for convenience. Yeah, I mean, you go into the Apple store and you say, well, you want to buy a new MacBook Pro and a mm-hmm. phone. How do I get these devices on the internet? Oh, well, call Xfinity and have them install a router in your house. And then you'll be on the internet. And you go, oh man, why can't Apple
again? That's
solve
a nightmare
this problem for me.
Well, if you have internet access, the thing that you have is already doing a certain amount of that for you. So, yeah, but I would disagree with you there only because I feel like it was another thing that Apple was doing that wasn't getting any attention. I mean, you know, doing as much.
Apple had an early cut on IPv6.
Uh huh.
Their Airport Extreme was one of the first routers that was IPv6 certified by uh-huh. Comcast.
Yeah, I mean,
easy to configure, easy to maintain.
I wish
a joy to use.
I wish that they had continued, but since they weren't giving it any attention and any love, I'm glad they killed it. That's where I'm at. Is it wasn't getting it? It wasn't the product it deserved to be. So I'm glad it doesn't exist anymore. That's my stance. I wish it did. I wish it was better. I wish it was awesome, and you know everybody could connect their Windows machines at home until they all go out and buy IMAX or whatever.
But that's like saying we got the horses out of the barn, but the barn still burned down.
Well, because Apple messed it up. So yes. I'm not annoyed by it. But yeah, Apple shot themselves in the foot with that one. So I'm glad that they figured out what happened and bid the Airport Express a fond farewell, only because they weren't doing anything with it. Like, it languished for ages and ages and ages.
And whose fault was that?
It was Apple's fault.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad that they at least got to a point where they could see the light and divest themselves of that. Officially, for reals, we don't do this anymore. Like, it took them 2 years longer than it should have. To be fair, it was 2 years longer than it needed to be.
Who thinks that's a great decision? I mean, if you survey all the journalists and customers, who amongst them would say, yeah, this was a great idea. Apple got out of a business that was thriving and it was important to them and it was important to us.
Apple got out of a business they did not care about.
This is your genius, right?
Apple got out of a business they absolutely did not care about. And that I'm good with. Because if they cared about it, we would have gotten another model or two or, you know, anything. Like, you know.
Well, that's why it's annoying. They should be carrying them.
Right. I would rather that they cared, but since they didn't, I'm glad they finally disabused everyone else of that notion, too.
What do you think, Adam? What do you think, Andrew?
Oh, I agree. Like, I actually agree with both of you. I wish Apple would still sell the AirPorts. I mean, they could turn that into another privacy or security feature.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm glad knowing that that decision is finalized instead of the product line just not being updated for so long.
Sitting on shelves collecting dust, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it bums me. With the Thunderbolt display.
Oh, don't get me started on the Thunderbolt display, John. We have to move on. All right. Apparently, we have a lot more annoyances than I thought we actually had. So we may revisit that in the future. But for right now, what I want to do is tell you about our sponsor while we're talking about networking and security and, you know, how Apple did a great job of handling that. Another company that does a great job of handling that is ExpressVPN. So with all the information, particularly on our show, that we give you about security breaches and data privacy and the kind of stuff that you need to care about all the time when you've got that computer in your pocket, it's hard not to worry all the time about all of the data on that computer in your pocket. So if you're making purchases, if you're, you know, on public Wi-Fi somewhere and all you do is check your mail, even that could be a practice that could put your private information at risk. You're being tracked online by loads of different companies, whether it's advertisers or social media sites or even your mobile provider or your ISP, who's taking that data and using all of that data to go and sell to someone else to make even more money. So some of those things happen pretty commonly. And not only does that information include your browsing history, but it can include all kinds of other data that you may not want other people to have, even if it's been anonymized. The way that you fix that is with something like ExpressVPN. So ExpressVPN has easy to use and install apps. They run in the background on your computer. They run on your phone. They run on your iPad. It's one click. You turn it on and you're protected. That's all you have to do. It secures your data and anonymizes your browser information by encrypting that data and hiding your public IP address. So anybody trying to get at you is going to have an even harder time doing so. Protecting yourself with ExpressVPN is less than $7 a month. It's the number one rated VPN service by TechRadar. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can take a shot at it and see how you feel. So you can protect all of your online activity and get 3 months free if you go to expressvpn.com/TDO. That's 3 months free if you buy a year package, and that's expressvpn.com/TDO. Now, our other topic today is this lawsuit that Andrew came across where people are mad at Apple because of their chargers.
Yep. Hashtag Chargergate.
Okay, let's hear it.
So this lawsuit claims that around November 2016, they're getting specific, this person claims that a bunch of people had problems with their Apple devices and they stopped recognizing and accepting their chargers, and that they were functioning normally before September 2016.
Okay, now specifically, and we're then, talking about the little white, the small square-ish wall charger that goes between the cord and the power outlet for your phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep.
And then it goes on to say, in October 2017, there was this new message on the iPhone that said, if you plugged in a certain accessory, it says, this accessory may not be supported when you tried to charge it. Mm-hmm. And so the suit claims this means that Apple was trying to force people to buy new chargers.
Okay.
Yeah.
you're done. That's the whole thing. Well, the first of all, honestly, and I know that this is because my house is probably not a normal house, but I have many, many, many of those little chargers, like as far as something with a USB port in it that I can plug into a wall that will charge a thing. I have a lot of them. I have the one that goes to my iPad. I have the one that goes to my phone. I have the one from my last phone. I have the one from my last iPad. I have the one for my Kindle. I have the one that came with that thing that I bought that time. I have the one that came with that other thing that I bought that time. Like, there are lots of them. You know, and even some of the outlets in my house have been upgraded so that you don't even need that piece. There's two regular, you know, power outlets, and then there's two USB ports in the sides so that you can plug in a cable and you don't have to cover up, you know, the entire outlet with one of those giant bricks. So I was a little confused by this because I sort of wondered, like, if maybe what they were having was a mismatch. Like, if you're using, you know, if you're not using the charger that came in the box that your phone came in, maybe there's some sort of outdated requirement on those little power bricks. But I have a hard time believing that it's Apple forcing you to buy a new one.
Yeah, because I saw this message once. I bought this third-party charger that probably wasn't MiFi certified. Mm-hmm. And when I tried to charge my iPhone, I did see that message. Oh, this accessory may not be supported. Mm-hmm. And this was well before 2017.
Mm-hmm. Because so, that was added specifically because there were places that were manufacturing chargers and saying they were iPhone chargers or cables. You know, lightning cables, particularly when the switch to lightning first happened, which I think was the iPhone 5 was when we got lightning cables. And, yeah. and for people who don't remember, there were people rioting in the streets with torches and pitchforks. How dare you get rid of my 30-pin connector? How dare you? And so a lot of places were making these really cheap and, you know, honestly, probably very shady lightning cables. So you could buy one for $10, you know, $8 or $10 instead of $30, which is what Apple charges for anyone. And this was in the dark times before there was a company like Anchor that was making them at a reasonable price. And so you could get something legitimate. And there really wasn't a lot of made for iPhone at that time. So there wasn't much in the way of MFI. And so people would plug stuff in and it wouldn't end well in some cases. So mm-hmm. I think part of this is part of where the MFI program came from. So I'm glad of it. But I do know that at least at first, there were a few times where somebody was saying, you know, I took the lightning cable that came with my phone and I plugged it into my laptop that also came from Apple, and then I plugged the other end into my phone from Apple, and it's telling me that this accessory is not supported. You know, so I've seen that message sort of turn on people sometimes. So that I'm the thing that I am always entertained by when we get news of a lawsuit like this is the projection of the people who brought the lawsuit. You know, clearly this is an attempt by Apple to force me to buy a new charger. Right? As opposed to, this is what happened, and, you know, I have this legitimate charger from Apple that has honestly stopped working on my phone, and I had to do this other thing instead. Like, instead, there, I'm always sort of entertained by the assessment. Like, this, you know, this is why this is happening. So, John, are you using
any sufficiently advanced technology? ... It's magic. I don't understand it. I'll just infer,
right,
draw my own conclusions, my motivated reasoning.
And that is sort of the part of these that I like, is finding out, you know, what it is people think is happening, as opposed to maybe I just need a different charger, yeah, or maybe my power outlet is wonky. You know, because, like, I've had that too. Like, I've had trouble charging things from time to time, and it turned out that, like, the problem I was having was that outlet. You know, like, yeah, that's a thing too. I would like to think that there's been more troubleshootings done, you know, in order for people to bring this kind of lawsuit. But
I've never had that problem that's described in this article. I never had a problem with any Apple equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Giving me messages, or third-party equipment from good companies where products I reviewed.
Right.
I've never had that problem crop up. I think the problem comes from buying discount cut-rate cables and chargers off of Amazon that have been made by some fly-by-night outfit in Asia.
Yeah.
And sold for $5 instead of, you know, 15.
Yeah,
and you can get into problems.
That's what I'm curious about. So I do know that for people who are looking for something, you know, that maybe isn't straight from the Apple store or isn't $29, you can find things on Amazon that are MFI, made for iPhone, which means they've been through some sort of certification process. And you can always get an alternative. And sometimes when I've had people talk about the alternatives, you know, one of the things that comes up is, like, I bought this other brand because Apple doesn't make a cable long enough or short enough for the thing that I'm trying to do here, right? So, you know, people always are sort of, I know a number of people who have asked me, like, random people on the street, like, I pull out my battery and I go to plug my phone into it, and I have like, an 8-inch cable as opposed to having to use the 3-foot cable. And people are like, wow, yeah, where did you get that? You know, and so I think there's definitely some room there, you know, for Apple, again, talking about annoyances. We could talk about, you know, maybe Apple doesn't need to put all of that. But, like, the bulk of the charging I do now is not with Apple equipment. I have a Qi charger from Anker that I use most of the time. That's where the bulk of the charging of my phone happens. So, like, I do occasionally, there's a lightning cable somewhere else in the house, the white one, from the iPhone box from Apple, that occasionally gets some mileage on it here and there. But by and large, like, what I'm using is a wireless charger. So
I'll put an unsolicited plug in here.
Yes.
They're not a sponsor, but I've never had a problem, and I've always had great success and customer satisfaction with monoprice.com. They sell good quality cables at a fair price.
They do. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I apologize if you live outside the United States, where sometimes Monoprice gear is hard to come by. I do. I have a fair amount of Anker equipment. We do have some Monoprice, but not mobile stuff. Some of the AV cables that we have are stuff from Monoprice. How about you, Andrew? Are you, like, all Apple, yeah, charger all the time with your stuff now?
Mostly. I have 2 Apple 3-foot cables and then 1 6-foot Anker cable.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually don't use that very often. I mean, I have a 3-foot cable on my desk and then the other 3-foot cable on my nightstand.
Yep. And then are you using the Apple wall chargers for those then?
Yeah.
Okay. So are you getting trouble with the accessory dialogue?
Nope.
Okay. Because Apple will be hearing from you, I'm sure. Well, if any of you have a hot tip about a charger that you're using that may be third party but is working really well for you, we would like to hear about it. You can get a hold of us at observations@macobserver.com. You can find us at TMO Daily on the Tweety box, and you can also leave comments in the show notes. And particularly if you have a link to something like that where we can get more information and possibly purchase one, that would be awesome too. I would like to thank both of you for joining me today. Thanks for coming by, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for having me on TDO Tuesday.
And John, thank you for joining me in the hole in the week.
You're welcome. Nice to be here.
And I've been your host, Kelly Gamott. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.